Previously on Worlds Away. Moments ago, countermeasures were deployed on Aventine 2B to fully and completely disable all Lustra-destroying devices and the facility which was manufacturing them.
We never used these weapons in war. Only the Republic attempted that.
Each of you have suspected the other to be in control of the ghost ship. But we've all suffered at its hands. We may need the capabilities of the Lustra-destroying devices to lure out the ghost ship.
If Aventine is agreeing to disarm, we will not allow this council to maintain a weapon this powerful. If you want our agreement, they must all be destroyed.
Done. And there's not like a second of hesitation from Nasir.
What do we see from Leela after Nasir so quickly agreed?
I think she's practiced at keeping her composure. But even so, for a moment, I think she looks hurt.
Madam President, I have given everything for peace. I am asking that you dare to dream.
I think there's a long pause. And then I think President Lee almost disbelievingly shakes her head left to right. But then she stands up and says, "What the hell?" And holds out a hand to Aiden Kuros.
I have a minus one, Alien.
I have a zero.
You're both so good at this.
Zero it is.
Yellow. Oh, that's bad. That is a four.
That's experience right there.
I think we just explode or something.
So I think we see the timer tick to zero, and maybe your focus goes back to the surface of the moon. But I think as we're looking back, you can make out a cloud of white exhaust that is punctuated by an explosion as a missile explodes seconds before the shrapnel begins to hit the Valiant. And I think the entire engineering section of the ship is vented into space.
Where was Charlie?
I'm not a pilot. I'm not a navigator. And so I make my way over to engineering to try to save Charlie.
You unquestionably reach your goal would come in real handy right now.
I know.
Would love too. Unquestionably reach your goal.
Oh, no. That's rough. Oh, that's rough.
I do want you to mark a stress, and I do want you to tell me what calamity you take.
An ally or resources put in peril or harmed. I think that it makes sense that I can't come in and save the day at the last second over here. And I don't know what that means for Charlie in this case, but I think that that's the consequence.
Back on the Valiant, I think we're inside the med bay. And I think we see Mara and Arno. I'm not sure if you're still in your vac suits or if you've taken them off at this point or sort of what you're wearing. But I think you're standing around the auto dock and we see Charlie Zamora lying there.
We need to talk about what happened when we were on Aventine 2B after I planted the first device near the bunkers. I lost control before I could take what felt like was my last breath. I had this moment of clarity and I was back in my indexing session with Leela, and she came up to me and said, well, she didn't say much of anything. She just convinced me that aliens were real. And I forgot that she made me believe it until I was in that room. I have to confront her about this. It can't happen again.
I think Mara stands up and walks over and puts her hand on his shoulder. It won't.
So I think back on Ascension, the mood is maybe more celebratory, right? You're not aware of what's happened on the Valiant. And it appears that this new armistice is moving forward. And I think during the days that follow the events that we played out in the last few scenes, the delegates are breaking out into small groups, refining the text of this new treaty, working out the exact nature of the structure of this council. Where do we see Leela during this time? Is there anyone that she meets with or any conversations that you want to have?
Yeah, I think Leela has sought out Mickey. And I'm trying to think where we would have gone. Maybe to just the suite that we had set up for the session with Aiden Kyros. Like maybe we're back in there.
So I think we see Mickey sitting, like maybe you have two chairs that are near each other, kind of diagonally angled toward each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a big smile on her face. And I think she says, ever since the first day we met, since your first experience in the landscape, I knew that you would achieve great things, Leela. And you did. What happened here? And she kind of gestures to the table. What you accomplished with Aiden Kyros, that is something that the Institute will never forget. I hope that you're feeling as proud of yourself as I am of you, Leela.
I think Leela has been looking down and she finally looks up, and I think you can kind of tell that even though there is some, you know, some of the stress on her face has been relieved, she's feeling, I don't know, maybe like 2/5 more stressed. That was a joke about how I took 2 stress.
I missed it. What with Charlie dying and all.
You know who's real stressed?
It's like I only give you all a collective 4 stress as the characters, as the players. It's been many times.
Oh,
more.
That's, I said, I was like, Nasir's not nervous at all. There's like no nervousness in Nasir. Meanwhile, my hands were physically shaking because I was like, these dice are going to kill me.
Knees weak.
Arms heavy, mom spaghetti.
Dice are sweaty.
All right, I'm going to just retake that.
Haley doesn't respect the art that is mom's spaghetti.
Pity.
But I think Leela looks up and there's maybe a touch of tension that has left her face since the backroom meeting and since we were able to successfully broker the deal. But I think there's still a lot behind her eyes, and there's a lot that's weighing on her. But I think she smiles kind of weakly and nods at Mickey.
I think if that's your only response, then I think Mickey kind of tries to move the conversation forward. Do you know what you want to do next after this? I'm sure that the preceptors would let you do anything you want. You could even be the youngest instructor at the Institute. Though, selfishly, I hope you still find some time to work with me.
I think Leela just kind of stands up very abruptly and says, I know this is the end of something, but I can't find it in me to look forward quite yet. And I think she's now pacing around the relatively small room, just kind of retracing her steps again and again. And I think she says, I suppose I've been thinking a lot about the past and about arrogance. And I don't know, Mickey, I don't know what I'm doing next. I barely know what I'm doing now.
I think when you say that, we see on Mickey's face her smile almost like soften and become more calming, I guess. That's the emotion that she's giving off. And she stands to address you if you're kind of pacing around the room, and she says, Leela, I'm sure you remember how you felt that first time we met before your first visit to my library.
I think Leela just kind of scoffs.
Well, I don't think you'd admit it. The person I saw sitting in that chair was exactly how you described. Someone who didn't know what they were going to do next. But when you left that room, I saw someone driven, someone with purpose. I know that's within you, Leela. And if anything has happened here, it should be that you've proven to yourself that you can achieve anything that you put your mind to.
I think Leela starts to shake her head, and then she stops herself and just says, but how do we know? How do we have so much certainty? Sometimes it feels like we have so much power over others, and there's so much responsibility that we take on, and I just don't know if we really have the right. And I think her sentences are kind of running on into themselves, and she's kind of staring off into the distance, and it seems clear that her mind is somewhere else.
I think Mickey's smile gets shallower, but then she says, if I'm being completely honest with you, we can't. And I don't know if it ever becomes easier. All we can do is do our best. And what happens next, that speaks for our work.
I think Leela senses the shift and kind of brings herself back to the present and says, I'm sorry, Mickey. I'm all out of sorts right now. I
think she actually interrupts and says, please, Leela, don't be. I think she puts her hand on top of yours.
I've been thinking a lot about the mistakes I've made. I think I just need a little time.
I think she just nods and says, take as much as you need, Leela. The Institute, will be there for you as soon as you're ready. Where do we find Nasir?
I think we find me in a bathroom, leaned over a sink that's running, breathing heavily. And I think the shot is actually just a close-up of my two hands, my dyed hand clearly visible, like clutching a sink, almost bone white. And I start to trace words with water on the mirror and breathe heavily, just count down, and I like slowly raise my eyes to the mirror, and you see a shaken look, and my eyes go down, my head goes down, and when they come back up, my game face is on, and I exhale and walk out of the bathroom to go find Mateo.
Where is it that you find him?
I think I message him to meet me in one of the side rooms we were using for the summit for like social receptions. I think it's a more private space. It's got a bar. I think it would give a casual energy, but it is like at the facilities. And I think it's late. I think it's been a few hours. I think folks have mostly cleared out.
I think as you enter, maybe we see Mateo standing near the bar. And it could be something else. I'm open to suggestions, but I think maybe he's pouring two glasses of Lucina. And I think as you walk up, maybe he hands one to you. Do you take it?
I take the glass in my left hand.
I think that he starts to speak and says, Nasir, over these past few months, we haven't always agreed on what needed to be done, on how best to save a piece. But what you achieved here, this is the first time I can remember having hope. I haven't felt that since before the war, since before. And he kind of shakes his head and says, Kyros asked me to be one of Aventine's representatives on the council. And if you asked, really, if any of you did, the Republic couldn't say no, could they? It'll take some time. And I know that we won't always see eye to eye, I know that. But we could work on this together, Nasir. We could build something better. The world that we always wanted for him.
I hit play on the message I recorded Nico Torres saying that we received information before the first strike on Aventine. How does he respond?
I think we just hear the sound play through. And I think he's just like frozen. But I think without you saying anything else or doing anything else, I don't think that you can tell if that's because he's just processing what has happened or if there's something else happening here.
Did you know? While I wait for his answer, John, before the rest of this conversation, I would like to roll of the people. When you make a person feel like they share a real connection with you, roll plus slick. And on various results, you get a read on them. And I think I have spent an entire campaign making this person feel like I have a real connection with them.
Go ahead and roll plus slick.
I'm also going to make one more ask. I have invoked a piece of our past history, whether it's true or not. Can I have advantage? You can say no, but I would like it.
So I think the question I have about that is, some speech is when you try to convince someone of a fact about your past. And so I guess the question is, I mean, is the fact that you're trying to convince them of that you were warned, is that what the fact is?
That we were warned.
Yeah. I was just trying to process that. Okay, yeah, you can take advantage.
Have mercy.
Good luck.
13. So on a 10 plus, hold 3. And I can ask one for one throughout this conversation. Is your character telling the truth? What is your character truly feeling? What does your character intend to do? How could I get your character to blank? And what does your character wish I'd do?
So I know that the rule allows you to hold these questions throughout the conversation. But to help me determine what happens next in response to your question, I'm wondering if I can know what your 3 questions are right now.
The first question is, how could I get your character to be honest with me? The second question is, what is your character truly feeling? And the third question I'm going to ask, but I need an answer before it really applies, is your character telling the truth? Because I think at this moment, the only thing I'm looking for is the truth.
So I'm going to answer those questions in order. Your first question was, how could I get your character to be honest with you? And the answer to that is that that's impossible. You asked what your character is truly feeling, and the answer to that is that he is afraid. Your third question was, is your character telling the truth? I think he says to you, of course not. And I think that you know he is lying.
Oh, fuck.
You're a coward. There are two people in the galaxy who are responsible for the death of our son. And only one of them has owned that. You are a coward. And you let me grieve alone. I think there's a moment of realization where I look down at my hand. I've spent the last 7 years searching the galaxy for forgiveness, Mateo. Let me know if you find any. And I'll walk out.
Oh, that was so cold.
Wait, sorry. I looked away for a second. What did you say?
I said...
You know what? You'll just have to hear it when you're editing.
Hasta la vista.
I said I spent the last 7 years searching the galaxy for forgiveness, Mateo. Let me know if you find any.
I spent the last 7 years in this galaxy looking for these nuts. And then he ran out of the room and I was like, damn, bro. Got his
toilet.
Ass.
And his ass was you.
Yeah.
And in Ohio.
I've been thinking about telling this man off for a long time.
Where are Leela and Nasir when they get the message that the Valiant has arrived back at Ascension, or is arriving back at Ascension?
Are we maybe at the apartment?
I think, yeah, we're probably in the apartment. And I think we take off as quickly as we can without dead sprinting. Or do we dead sprint? I kind of want to dead sprint, but that might attract attention. I take off dead sprinting. Fuck it.
I mean, I think you got the message, and I think it includes that Charlie's been hurt.
Oh,
if I can just add to, I think I wouldn't say that Charlie's hurt. I would say come to the med bay. I don't know that we would say who was hurt.
If we got a message that said come to the med bay, I take off running. And
I think Leela, a split second after Nasir, also breaks into a run and chases after him.
And let's not forget, they're both very fit.
They're hot
and hot.
They're toned.
I said fit.
They're fit. It's a good time.
So I think right as the walkway is extending to reach the airlock of the Valiant, the two of you are already running across it. And we see the door to the ship open and Captain Alba is standing there and she has a grim look on her face. I think the next shot is the two of you entering the med bay and seeing Charlie lying in the auto dock. Are Arno and Mara there also?
Yeah.
I think the next shot is maybe all four of you are in the med bay and maybe you're standing there just as a physician is leaving and having told you that there's nothing in their knowledge that could help revive Charlie from this state.
I am like down on a knee by the side of the auto dock holding Charlie's hand, and I think I am weeping. I don't think in this moment I'm handling this well.
I think Leela is breathing heavily and just looking at Charlie in the auto dock, and there's a little bit of a recognition of someone else who is in a very similar position, but at the forefront of her mind is just like pain and sadness. And I think she's not as openly bawling, but is shedding several tears.
As we were escaping from Aventine 2B, we were chased by a few Aventine ships, and before we could engage the contramatter drive, we took a hit and Charlie was in the vicinity. If Dr. Belova hadn't gotten the damage under control, we wouldn't be here, but I didn't quite make it in time.
You did everything you could, Arno. It wasn't your fault.
Sometimes it's not enough. It's certainly not enough for Charlie.
And Asir, you said that you were almost kneeling, I guess. Where is that happening?
I am right by the auto dock. I think I'm like holding Charlie's hand if I can. I think Charlie and I were very, very close. And I think this is fucking me up. I can see brainwaves. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's not exactly the same as what you saw on the auto dock in the Amity with Nadia, but I think you notice some similarities in terms of the intermittent and these patches of what might be construed as similar to dreaming.
I'm going to turn to Leela, actually. You've indexed before with someone who was unconscious. Could you do it again?
I think Leela focuses on Nasir's face, thinks for a second, and says, perhaps. I don't know what's wrong with Charlie. It's probably not the same thing that happened to Nadia. And I think she looks to Mara and Arno for like some sort of insight or, you know, their input.
I think Arno looks at Charlie and says, it's okay, Leela. I know you can do it.
That's so fucked. You're like, fuck you. It's so gross. It like feels icky to sit in.
It's worth a try at least.
So I guess Leela just reluctantly nods and says, I'll do it.
So I actually don't want to describe yet what you see inside the landscape, and I don't want to play out that part of the scene. I think what I want you to do is roll into the abyss.
Oh, okay.
I'm willing to take a suggestion if there's a better move for this.
No, I mean,
and I'm also willing to be persuaded if you think that your sage's background could apply here.
So, I mean, I think Into the Abyss is the right move, and I don't have an argument for anything else. Thinking about the sage's background, when you try to pierce lies, confusion, or mystery and see the wisdom beyond, you have advantage. I mean, I think there's some confusion. I would love to argue it, but it feels a bit shaky.
Okay. Then I think just roll straight.
All right, Into the Abyss. That would be a full success. That's a 14.
Jesus Christ.
Into the Abyss. When you stare unblinking into the abyss, looking for forbidden or forgotten knowledge, you roll plus alien. And on a 10 plus, you're shown dark visions that lend you insight. And you ask the abyss one question, and the abyss will answer. And then I'll ask you a question from the abyss stares back. So I can tell, I think, what direction this is heading, but what exactly is your question for the abyss?
I think the question I have is, how do we heal you?
I think we're back in the maze.
My old friend.
And I think you're not navigating the maze with twists and turns. I think you're just almost walking straight ahead the entire time, even though there are paths branching off to your left and your right with every few steps you take. And I think maybe 50 yards in front of you through the mist, you start to see a figure. And that figure is Charlie Zamora. But I think as you approach, it becomes harder and harder to walk. It's almost how in some dreams you kind of feel your legs start to give out from underneath you, and it's harder and harder to control your movements. And as you move forward, you actually see that the ground of this maze is beginning to dissolve. Next to you is a rope. Do you throw it to Charlie, or what do you do with it?
How far is Charlie from me?
At this point, maybe 10 yards away.
I throw them the rope.
What do you do with the other end?
I tie it to myself.
So I think you tie the rope to yourself and begin to wade back out of the maze, back toward the way you came. And I think as you're doing that, the surroundings again start to glitch out. And intermittently, you see on the walls of this maze the text that we as the audience know to be words from the poem Hal. And at this point, I'm going to ask my question to you. And that is, what faint hope does your character cling to?
I think right now, before the Valiant came back, there were two things on Leela's mind. And I think she was kind of talking about both in different ways while she was talking to Mickey. The first was what happened on Kairos and how we believed we knew best and we decided what was right for that planet, and something irreversible happened. But I also think that she's been thinking about what happened between her and Paolo, and how she also made a lot of decisions in arrogance. And I think she knows in the back of her mind that there are other times where she's made decisions in arrogance. But I think the one that she's thinking about is when she put her own ambition over Paolo. And so I think the faint hope that she clings on to is that, on one hand, that humanity is still capable of being fundamentally good, and on the other hand, the other side of that same token, that she is still capable of being fundamentally good.
So I think at this point, the substance you're standing in or wading through, and it's not water, it's almost like quicksand. It's reaching all the way up to your chest. And I think as Charlie sinks into this and pulls you down with them, you turn back and then look forward and begin to push harder than you've ever pushed before. And with one hard pull, you grab the rope and fling yourselves both out of this morass, and you begin to fall through the void. As your eyes flutter open and you instinctively reach to stop the metronome, you see that on the screens of the auto dock, the readings, while still indicating what can only be described as significant injury to their brain, have begun to stabilize and suggest someone resting in a deep sleep.
And I think you just sort of see my face break and I, like, start to cry.
I think Leela's still in shock and just sits there staring at the brainwave monitor for a long time.
I think a smile and like a sigh of relief comes across Arno's face just for a moment, and his back straightens up and he says, Charlie needs their rest. We still have things to discuss. We should go to the ward room.
Hey there, it's Lauren. Thank you so much for listening to the show. If you're enjoying Worlds Away so far and you know someone who has similar refined and sophisticated tastes, please go ahead and recommend us. If you have no friends, you can also help the show by rating and reviewing us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other platform you use to listen to podcasts. Additionally, give us a shout out on whatever social media platform you swear you're going to quit this year. If you want to say hi, you can also find us on most platforms at Worlds Away Pod or online at worldsawaypod.com. Thanks again for listening. And now back to your episode.
How do we find you all in the wardroom?
So I think you find Arno seated closest to the back wall. And he's got his slate in front of him. But his hands are on either side of it, palms down. And I think he's got his eyes closed for a second. He's just processing.
I'm leaned against the coffee, snacks, food counter with like a tea, like a steaming tea in my hands. And I think like I'm probably shivering a little.
Mara's sitting there just looking forward unblinkingly.
What about Leela?
I think Leela is still recovering from whatever it was that just happened. So I think she's kind of half aware of what's going on, half just kind of in her own thoughts.
I think after a second, Arno opens his eyes, taps his slate to life, and says, "The mission to neutralize the devices was a success, but there were complications along the way that we should all be aware of."
I think before he gets started, or continues, I should say, you'll just see me like quickly pull out my slate and flick something to the two of them. "For your review later, Aventine and Earth have both agreed publicly to decommission all remaining devices and never to build them again."
I think at that, Arno is genuinely surprised. I think he raises an eyebrow, is taken back a second, and composes himself and says, "When we arrived on Aventine 2B, we were very fortunate that the guards at the facility were already distracted. As we got into position, we learned that there was a ship crash not far from the facility and began to plant the devices. After Dr. Belovin and I split up, we intended to regroup, plant the final device, and make our way back to the Grizz, hopefully without catching the attention of anybody on 2B and making our escape without harm. That didn't happen, and I'd like to explain why. After planting the device, I decided to go off script and do an investigation at the administration building at the base. And there I looked for any and all information that Aventine had about the ghost ship, about aliens, about really anything related to the things that we've seen on the Minerva project. And by the time I completed my investigation, I believe that the Aventine forces were alerted to my presence there. Alarms started going off, and that's where things went awry. I got out as quickly as I could, attempted to create a distraction for Dr. Belova, and we made our way back to the Grizz, departed from Aventine 2B, and were hit with a rocket before we could engage the CM drive. We were unable to send a message before all of the excitement and before we engaged the CM drive. This is what we found. And I think Arno flicks all the information that he had collected on 2B to everybody's slates.
I think when he does that, you see on your slates detailed records of both Aventine's historical use of the devices, or their kind of development from the very beginning of when they first discovered the prototype on Aventine 2B, along with records of every sighting they have of the ghost ship, tracing back to the first sighting during the mission where the Republic abandoned the device on the moon, or left the device by accident. But I think as you're flipping through that, well, the origin of the ghost ship is unexplained, perhaps. In those documents is nothing that suggests to anyone reading them that some force beyond humanity is responsible for it.
So we have further proof that Aventine did not create the rogue vessel, and no suspicion from them that it is anything other than a Republic ship.
That's correct.
Unsurprising, but helpful.
But not with the risk. And I think at that, Arno takes a very deep breath. He says, "Wouldn't you agree, Leela?"
I think my eyebrow will go up.
I think Leela has been, again, like kind of staring off. And at that, she focuses in on Arno's face and says, "No." And I think she sighs, "Not worth the risk."
My actions put this entire mission in jeopardy. Not just our attempt to neutralize the devices on 2B, but Peace Summit here. We could have been compromised. They could have captured us and had every strategic advantage, and we'd have nothing to show for this. What I did was impulsive, inexcusable, and ultimately nearly cost Charlie their life. And I had no control over my actions when that happened. The only thing I could think of the entire time I was on 2B, making my way to the administration building, was aliens. Leela, can you imagine that? Years of training, countless missions under my belt, and everything on the line for this mission, the fate of the Verge at stake. And I took action for aliens.
Fuck.
Damn, you got me good. I think Leela is staring at Arno's face, but I don't think it feels like she's actually looking at him.
Do you remember when I started to believe that it was aliens behind the ghost ship, Leela? It was right after our indexing session, and I believed it wholeheartedly, and I knew, I didn't just think, but I knew that the ghost ship had to be aliens that were attacking Aventine and the Republic, and that our entire investigation needed to be focused around exposing them, protecting humanity from them. And when I got to Aventine 2B, I re-entered that space you took me to. After you showed me the landscape, I was there again. And I felt like I was drowning. And I was running to escape that vision. And as soon as I got the information that I needed, it's like a spell was broken. I was in control of myself again. The alarms were blaring. And I remembered what you did to me in the landscape, Leela. You planted that thought in my head. You took my agency away from me. You put this whole mission at risk. And you put Charlie in that bed.
How are Mara and Nasir reacting right now?
I think maybe you can see Mara's jaw tighten as Arno tells his truth. But other than that, you don't really see any response.
I think Nasir's really confused. I don't think this makes a lick of sense to Nasir. We're talking about stuff. Nasir's been to the landscape. It was nice, right? I mean, like, it sucked. It hurt emotionally. It was devastating. But, like, it helped him. So he's quiet and confused.
I think Leela finally focuses back on Arno. And I think she just says, "I'm sorry." And then I think she looks away.
I think Arno, very briefly, you can see just a flash of anger across his face, and his breathing gets really heavy. And he realizes what's happening, and he tries to calm himself down. He takes a deep breath in. And he says, "How many others are there? Me, Ruby, the miner at Consus. Who else have you done this to?"
Nico Torres was nice enough to start making a list. And I think at this point, Mara will clock Nasir's confusion. And
I do want to name, at the mention of Nico Torres, if you're clocking Nasir, there is a moment of unbridled hatred. And then it goes back to confusion. But it's instinctual at the mention of his name.
That's fair.
Yeah.
But she'll send Nasir the information that Torres showed Mara in their meeting.
I think Leela still has her head turned away and says, "I'm so sorry. I don't know."
You don't know? You don't know what?
I think she looks back at Arno and says, "I don't know how many there are."
Oof, a wrong answer.
Is that because you don't have control over your powers? Or is it because you and the Sato Institute have lost count?
I think there's something a little horrified in Leela's eyes as she realizes that Arno thinks this is something that everyone at the Sato Institute does. And I think she says, "This is not something that I learned from the instructors at the Sato Institute. At first, I barely understood what I was doing or that it didn't feel wrong. I felt like I was helping people."
"Like you were helping me? Did you help Aiden Kyros too?"
So, at the mention of Aiden Kyros and looking over this list and recognizing the moments where Nasir felt that Leela was just very good at her job, right? I've like referenced this list. I could have written this list, right? As like the moments where Leela changed the game for us. I'm not sure I understand what you're both talking about. Leela, what did you do to these people? And there's no accusation in Nasir's voice.
I think Leela turns to look at Nasir and says, "I did the thing you're not supposed to. I was trying to help them, mostly. You're not supposed to change someone else's expression. Didn't really know that's what I was doing at first. It's all a bit abstract, you know? But I didn't mean for this to happen." And I think she looks around at each of the other three people in turn.
"It's not as simple as modifying my expression, or however you put it. We are four of the highest profile figures in the Verge, working on one of the most important missions for the fate of humanity, and your actions nearly restarted the war. We got lucky that this is all that happened, Leela.
Did you do it to Aiden Kiros? Did you do it to me?
I think Leela takes a moment and then says to Nasir, to Aiden Kiros, yes. To you, no.
What? For the viewers at home, you can't see the look on Mike, Lauren, and Moe's faces, but we are flabbergasted at 12:06 a.m.
Did you want me to lie?
Didn't happen on, did that happen on screen? Did I miss that somewhere?
No, it did happen on screen.
No, she just rolled like a something crazy high.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Remember how you helped me figure out how to modify his painting?
I do remember that.
That was it. You helped.
I think
that's right. I did. I forgot. It's just 12:06 a.m. So I forgot.
And like a month since the last recording.
It's like, did you forget or were you made to forget?
Is he going to figure it out the way Anno did? Is this? Oh my God. And I think you just see me start pulling up the terms from like all of the recent sessions. And just like, can Aventine get out of this? Right? Like, can he take it back? And I think I'm panicking a little.
How does Leela explain to Nasir that when she was indexing Arno, that was a partial success when she was indexing Aiden Kiros? I have a question.
Maybe she doesn't know.
Success.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's what I was going to ask. Does Leela know if it's going to be permanent or not?
No, I don't. I don't think so. I mean, I think like there are some times when shit goes wrong, like with Ruby Watson, where it was kind of obvious immediately. But I'll say this in character. I don't know. I have a fairly good track record. But I don't suppose that's necessarily a good thing.
How does Mara react to the phrase, I have a pretty good track record?
I mean, I think just like waves of like the slow blink meme guy, but more serious than that. It's just, yeah, she hasn't found her moment to speak up yet.
I didn't come into this thinking I was going to change the course of history and impose my will on the leader of Aventine. It's usually just a nudge, just a small push when sometimes it's something that the person doesn't want about themselves. And it got out of hand.
Get out.
I think Leela looks up at Arno, kind of, not necessarily with a questioning look in her eyes, because I think she heard him, but almost just willing him to say it again.
Mara turns her face and she says, he said, get out.
You said you didn't do it to me. And I believe you. You helped me a lot, Leela. I don't think I understand why you thought helping people that way wasn't enough. Thank you for everything. And I will go back to my notes, trying to figure out how to save this piece.
I think Leela flashes a small, I wouldn't even call it a smile, but an acknowledgement to Nasir. And then, as she gets to the door, she turns around and says, "It wasn't supposed to turn out this way. I'm sorry." And then I think she leaves.
I have a question for the remaining two people in the group. What do you do after she leaves?
I think as we hear the swoosh of the sliding door, I look up from my notes for a minute, and I look at both of you, but I stare very intently at Arno. Are you both okay?
I will be, if it's okay with you too. I'd like a minute alone. I still haven't had time to really process this.
Of course, Arno. I'll try to give him a hug.
What?
It's an awkward side hug. I don't think I really know how to handle it, but my palms come off the table and I kind of just let it happen, but I don't hug back.
That's okay. I wrap my arms fully around Arno Heinz and give him a hug.
Thank you, Nasir, but I will be okay.
Mara's just going to give him a pat on the shoulder and she'll say, "I'll be right down the hall."
And I think we both leave.
And I think I sit there for a minute and I stare at the space where Leela had been sitting. And then I say, "Cassandra, did you catch all of that?"
Jesus.
Damn.
I think the next scene is a couple days later still. And I think it's just as the conference is reaching its conclusion. And maybe at this point, the treaty has been fully drafted. And maybe the next day actually is the signing ceremony. Where do we find Mara?
I think she's sitting in the park, maybe. And it's kind of juxtaposed because it's kind of juxtaposed against all of the previous scenes we've had in the garden where there was either clandestine conversations or large extravagant parties. I think it's actually maybe the most toned down we've ever seen it. And I think Mara is sitting on the bench with her shoes off and kind of just with her feet in the grass.
So I think if that's how we see the park and if it's no longer being used for the summit, maybe all the abnormal lighting and decorations that we described previously have kind of been taken down. And maybe at the time that we see you there, it's supposed to be more of a daylight. And I think there's a very bright artificial sunlight lighting this park. And I think that we see, because of that, walking toward you and actually wearing a pair of sunglasses, we see Nolan Callahan. And I think in his hands, he has two paper cups. Where is Mara sitting? Did you say you were in one of the benches?
Yeah, on a bench.
So I think he walks up to you and extends his left hand. And in there, you see there's a cup of coffee, and I think it has latte art on the top. I think it's just a flower or a rosetta.
Mm.
Do you take the coffee from him?
Yeah. I think they sit there for a second, and I think she says, "I participated in a strike against a clandestine weapons development base on one of Aventine's moons at the end of the peace summit." I think she looks at Nolan and she waits for a response.
I think he just removes his sunglasses. I don't think he says anything.
This poor man.
Don't worry, we were successful.
I think when you say that, he just shakes his head left and right and exhales deeply. I think you almost see him like talk to himself. He's like mouthing like "it's going to be okay" or something like that to himself. But eventually he regains his nerves and says, "Look, Mara, I know it will take another few days to wrap things up here. I'm sure you have packing to do too, but I made arrangements so I can stay here a bit longer, come back with you on the same ship. There's a ton I want to catch you up on, some new problems, real long shot stuff. That way, once we're back, we can start off strong, you know?
I think she shakes her head back and forth. I don't think I'm going back. I don't think I can leave yet.
I think when you say that, he sighs and says, no, I get it. I know that a few days, I wasn't thinking straight. I'll head back before, and again, I'll make sure things are ready. We'll be prepared. You know, if it takes another 2 weeks, a month, just whatever you need, we'll be ready.
I think she gives him a side eye and she kind of smiles. Okay, if you say you're going to wait. But I wouldn't.
What do you mean, Mara?
There's just some things that I have to do here. And some things I need to see. And there's so much I don't understand. And it's dangerous. It's dangerous to the universe. Genesynth is millions of light years away. We thought we had reach and power. And we do, but not enough. I understand what I do is important. But if I don't stay here, I can't protect anyone. And I can't heal. I need you to understand.
I think he looks back at you and I think he puts the glasses back on and then takes them off again and stands up and paces three steps and then turns back around. You need me to understand? And he walks another step forward and says, that night we first met, I took a chance on you, Mara. And I'll be the first to admit it paid off. You joining us saved Genesynth, saved our vision for humanity beyond Earth. But without that, you wouldn't be here either, Mara. And now what? You're going to throw that all away? Explore the Verge? How is that rational?
I think she's looking at him very confused. It's not rational. It's just selfish, I guess. I'm sorry. I think I quit.
Oh. Holy shit.
I think when you say that, he looks back at you again and just almost scoffs. It's like a sharp exhale. And he shakes his head again and puts the glasses back on and walks away.
Damn, now both Mara and Lauren are unemployed. This sucks. Can't even have a job in my fucking fantasy.
At least you're it's rich okay, in I your fantasy.
That's right.
It's okay. I can't even have a man in mine.
Yeah, that's also true.
Arno, I think we find you in the same conference room where we saw the final negotiations between Earth and Aventine, though you don't necessarily know that that was the space. And I think the door is closed and you know, the glass is opaque. And you're there because Rear Admiral Isabella Mendoza asked to meet with you after learning what you did on Aventine 2B. What's Arno wearing?
Khakis.
Well, he sounds hideous.
I think even after everything, the version of himself that he feels the most comfortable with is the Arno wearing the Minerva Project jacket.
Growth.
So I think maybe you're at the edge of the table, like one of the corners, and, you know, Mendoza's not seated right next to you, but is kind of on the short side of the table. So like two seats away from you, but still in a very close, comfortable talking distance. And I think she's, you know, it's maybe not the same degree of casual as she was in that first scene where we saw you two in her office, but it's certainly closer to that than when we've seen her most recently. What you and Belova did on 2B, that certainly was gutsy, Arno. It doesn't change anything I said before, and the plan that Nico Torres developed was still better. But still, you took action and prevented a bad situation from turning into a disaster.
I think for the first time that Arno has known Rear Admiral Isabella motherfucking Mendoza.
Butt fucking. Get it right.
Rear Admiral Isabella Mendoza.
No.
Butt fucking Mendoza.
Dear God.
I think for the first time since Arno has known Rear Admiral Isabella Mendoza, he didn't just accept everything that she said as true. And it's not that it comes from a place of pride or arrogance or anger. I just think she said something that he didn't agree with, and it's his first time that he's thought that she was just wrong. And he says, I think we have different definitions of better if Nico Torres's plan is what you would have preferred, Admiral.
I think she just audibly exhales from her nose. It's not a loud protest or a scoff or anything like that. It's just you get the sense that she disagrees with you, but is not going to raise a stink. And she says, did you ever figure out what happened with Lillian Gale? I assume you got something. Wouldn't be like you to leave Shaw empty-handed.
I think he taps the screen on his slate, and there are a couple of folders that have been parsed out, and he flicks one folder over in the direction of her slate. And he says, I don't know if I would call this actionable, but something to be aware of.
I think she opens it up and sort of quickly flicks through a few items and then closes it. Maybe kind of like leaves it bookmarked to look at later. And then she says, well, I assume you already know most of this from your own investigation, but I thought you might find this bit interesting. And she actually slides across to you a large slate. And when you tap that, you see on it a series of what appear to be screen captures as she sort of continues talking. A source in station security was able to grab her slate once they found the body. It will take us years to go through it all, but this might be one of the best intelligence takes since the end of the war. One thing they just pulled yesterday jumped out to me, though. Apparently, Gale believed that her vice consul was working directly for Kuros as part of Aventine's research branch. And also that Nasir Badok was leaking information to him from our side of the fence. Badok is still close to the president, maybe now closer than ever. If you have anything to back up Gale's suspicions, you need to tell me, Arno, for all of our sake.
I think at that, he looks her dead in the eye, and it's not an intense look. It's just meeting her gaze. And he says, Nasir Badok did more to preserve the security of the Republic than anybody else in this mission. He put his personal feelings aside, and in the toughest situation imaginable, damn sure got more out of the Abbeys than they got from us. I think we would just call that a trade-off, ma'am.
I'm legitimately on the verge of tears.
I think she pauses for a second and then lets out a deep breath. And now it almost is like a slight smile, but it's one of almost Like she's fascinated or confused by the situation. And she shakes her head left to right.
Like when a kid stands up to you and but it's like says something and you're like, wow, I did not see that coming.
Yeah. Or it's like, you know, I think she doesn't not believe you is the sense you get, right, Arno? I think she's just kind of the whole situation's flabbergasting. But then she says, on the first night of the conference outside the park, you told me that you were trying to eliminate our legacy from Aventine 2B. The problem with legacy, though, is as much as you try to run from it, it's impossible to erase history. I always opposed the creation of these devices. We never needed them to win. But once Aventine got a hold of them, Pandora's box was opened, and I'm not sure it's so simple to close it up again. Your reports said that Aventine had been preparing to fight a conventional war, building up their supplies across the Verge. You know as well as I do that Aventine wouldn't have lasted another year were it not for the last armistice. Even if they had made a massive effort to build out their supplies, I don't see how they could have filled even a dozen of the caches you described in so little time, and certainly not in a way that would outpace our own. And if Herrera was working with Kyros all along, I don't see why he would have backed your story at the press conference. When you told me it feels like we were being played, I think you were right about that. But I don't think it's some rogue faction or whatever ghost ship you saw. The enemy here is the same one that we've known all along. And if we give up on the knowledge that could change or even the odds, I'm as certain as I've ever been that someday in the future we'll regret having made that choice.
This is a really weird moment for Arno because he just thinks she's wrong again. And he looks at her and says, I think it's easy to be held back by our own history when we have so much of it. And part of the reason that you had accepted that there was no way out of this but forward towards war was because it's all we've known in our own histories. But you never thought to ask how we found the devices in the first place, how we were so effective at finding and neutralizing them. And whoever started all this, it doesn't matter. Admiral, at the end of that story, Pandora's box, what was left behind when the nightmares escaped was hope. And we have that now. A means to not just destroy each other, but to stop ourselves from destroying each other. We didn't have that before because we were convinced it didn't exist. We never even considered the possibility.
I think when you say that, she just lightly shakes her head left to right, and you can tell that she thinks you're missing something here. But then I think she stands and I think offers you a last salute.
I think he goes to raise his hand, and before it can reach past his chest, he catches himself and extends it instead for a handshake.
Oh, shit. He's a civilian now.
I think without her eyes ever breaking from yours, she lowers her hand and takes yours.
I just have one last question. I recovered something on 2B. There was footage that showed that the earliest known footage of the Go ship came from a Republic ship. I don't know that we ever recovered that footage. How long have you known about it?
I think with her hand still firmly grasping yours, she looks down for a moment before looking up and saying, I'm sorry, Mr. Hines. That's classified. Oh. And then releases your hand and walks out of the room.
Hit him with the Uno reverse.
And I think as he watches her leave, he just stands there for a minute and says to himself, I know, but I'll be looking.
Oh, I don't know. Mr. Hines.
In this next scene, we see the lead delegates from each planet climbing a small set of stairs and stepping onto a stage built near the docks on Ascension, with hundreds upon hundreds of stars as the backdrop. They're surrounded by a sea of reporters and diplomats who are all watching as they sit down at a long table and are presented with ceremonial, real paper copies of the new treaty that the four of you helped build. And as this is happening, I don't think they're occurring in any chronological order, but we see a montage of shots that are intercut with this ceremony. We see Morris Shaw stepping onto the walkway of Ascension Station and looking over his shoulder back towards the park, when a man and a woman wearing fleet uniforms politely gesture him toward a line of people who, from their attire, we can tell are all waiting to board a ship headed back to Earth. We see Sasha Green standing at a podium, answering questions from a small group of reporters between the flashes of a camera, wearing the pin of a member of the new Galactic Council, and with several others, including Ramon Herrera, standing behind her. We see Charlie Zamora, propped up in a hospital bed, straining to tap on a slate, trying to barely relearn the things that they had easily mastered years, if not decades, earlier. And we see a group of people wearing vac suits opening a large set of metallic doors into one of what you suspected were Aventine weapon caches all throughout the Lua system and elsewhere across the Verge. And as they shine their suit lights across that space, we see that the room is almost entirely empty and appears to have never been filled. But as this montage continues, I want to ask you where we see your characters just for a few seconds. And I want you to describe that as if you were the GM.
I think we see Leela with some luggage in her hands, and she's making her way towards the docks. I think we stop at the front of a building that is clearly a hospital. And I think Leela steps inside and places an envelope at the reception desk before walking back out and continuing on her way to the docks. And then I think we cut back to inside the hospital where we see the envelope make its way to Charlie Zamora's room. And I think when they open the envelope, it's a sketch of them in the engineering bay, arms deep into some wires and all sorts of mechanical things, and just kind of in their element. And then I think we cut back to Leela, and she is boarding a ship at the docks.
We see Mara, and she seems to be in the middle of some sort of diplomatic incident. So she's kind of having a heated conversation with two individuals wearing what we would recognize as Aventine uniforms. And then I think someone opens a door, and Aiden Kiros steps out and gestures her inside.
We find Nasir sitting at a table in a briefing room, surrounded by other members of President Lee's administration, as Mar Elkin stands at a screen with figures, poll numbers, and an appearance listing on where Nasir and others will need to go immediately upon returning to the Republic. And I think the scene continues, and we watch Nasir walk out and hop on the Ascension Station tram to the Verge side of the station. And I think we see me pull up an old image of Mateo, Salim, and I. And as I get off the train, image still on my slate, I think we see me walk into an office. And as the door closes, we zoom in on the nameplate, and it says, Leo Norris, the Libera voice.
Nice.
Oh, shit.
Where do we find Arno?
You find Arno getting out of a small shuttlecraft, wearing a familiar back suit with another one tucked under his arm. And he makes his way across a barren surface to an airlock, punches in the code. And when he gets to the other side, he opens the door and finds a very startled person inside, someone who hasn't seen anyone for quite a while. And he takes off his helmet and he tosses the vac suit and says, time to go, Marvin.
Perfect.
I think when you toss the suit at him, I think actually maybe he heard the airlock open. And I think that he's standing there very defensively, nervously. And I think he's actually holding in his hands a fire extinguisher, but not like as if it's a bludgeon, but almost as if it's a rifle with the spray nozzle sort of ineffectually aimed at the door. His hair is longer than when we last saw him, and his skin is a little paler, but I think that what strikes you the most is his face. I think that when I described Shaw and, you know, when you saw him after Sion died, I said it looked hollow. And I think that that's exactly what you see here. But as you step into the room and as the vac suit kind of falls to the ground next to him, I think he holds the fire extinguisher even tighter and raises the nozzle up toward you before saying, what do you want? Where are you taking me?
Where do you want to go?
What do you mean?
So, I know we left him here a while ago, and I just got to know, is there a place for me to sit down for a second?
I think so. I think there's a table. You know, maybe there's, I think, like, containers of cans or MREs kind of on the surface of the table, but I think you can maybe brush some stuff out of the way and sit down at one of the chairs.
I'll sit down at a chair, and I'll gesture to the other one. And does he move towards it?
I think it takes a few seconds, and I think he's kind of been tracking you with the fire extinguisher hose. But I think sort of skeptically and slowly he inches toward the chair and maybe lowers the fire extinguisher so it's on the ground next to him, still very close and in reach if he needs to raise it again. But then he lowers himself down to the chair.
Easy, Tiger. There's no fire anywhere near here. And I'm going to pull out a slate and slide it to his side of the table.
I think he looks up at you and then looks down before extending his hand and sliding it back toward him. What does he see on the slate? Or what does Arno say to describe it?
I think he sees headlines and stories detailing the new armistice. And I, not really looking at him, kind of just at the wall, facing away from him, and I just say, it's over. There's no reason to keep you here anymore.
I think he's flipping through, and then maybe it's another 30 seconds or so of him scrolling before he says, it's over. What are we supposed to do now?
I think I came here hoping that you would have the answer to that question. You've had a lot of time to think, and I'm sure you hoped to one day be out of this room. I don't know what men like us do in times of peace. We can't just pretend that what we had done never happened. There are people we've wronged and families who don't have someone coming back to them to enjoy this peace. And so I think we have to wonder, where's the place for men like us in this new peaceful world?
I think he, after some time, uneasily, slowly stands, and he says, I guess I want to go home. What about you?